Major Hun, Reel 40. Saying that you had orders to leave Castelo Sangro, how much warning did you have of this move?
Probably a few hours. A normal, you know. If we got 8 hours' notice, that would be good. Because we're pretty mobile, it didn't take us long to. We could move in an hour if necessary. Apart from lifting the stuff down from the top, from the mountains and our positions up there, down to the square, because you couldn't get any vehicles up anywhere else. That was the only struggle.
Did you have a lot of heavy gear up on those positions?
Not a lot, really. I don't know if we handed, in fact, I don't suppose we had to hand over to anybody. So everything that was up there came down, but we travelled with our normal sort of machine guns, and probably we might have one or two mortars up there, but nothing heavy, because it all had to be carried, so anyway. But we left at midnight, and everyone was quite pleased to leave, because infantry wasn't our cup of tea at all. We were looking forward to getting back into our armoured cars and doing the right sort of job that we were trained for.
Did the enemy let you go unmolested? Did they
interfere at all? They started to withdraw, because Casino Falling sort of opened up that flank, so they were dropping back. And we travelled from midnight throughout the night, and we reached a place at dawn called Caravelle, or Caraville. And where we stayed for a few days, sort of sorting ourselves out, I suppose, and we couldn't probably push on. Of course, a lot of that was still infantry work, I think.
Were you in contact with the enemy at that stage, or just moving forward?
Not at this particular place. As I say, we hadn't got into our stride of being a armoured car. I think most of it, so the infantry had broken through and were sort of working on it. Before we could break out and get on. And we stayed at a little place called Cernia. And that was a lovely spot. Just like a little heaven, really. There were spring flowers, the side of a river, lovely meadows and that sort of thing. And we were staying there for a few days. And the river was well stocked. And so, you know, could smell the fish frying, and every now and again a grenade would be thrown into the water, and that would come the, you know, restocking. So it was a great day, and we lived very well, actually. But each troop by then was on its own cooking. Each armoured car did its own cooking from then on.
Were you heavily loaded with work during this phase in getting the organisation back together, or were
not
you?
Not really, no. I think it doesn't matter. Each armoured car crew knew the drill, made sure everything was going well, the guns were well loaded and all that sort of thing. So there was nothing much to do really in that stage. And on the 9th of June, we were started patrolling the roads in the area of Subiaco. That was to the east of Rome, and all the armed cars were involved, but there was no sign of any contact or anything. It was just a matter of patrolling and sort of thing.
What were you looking for? Were you looking for the enemy, or were you looking at the condition of the roads themselves and the ground?
It was sort of a patrol, looking to see whether there were an enemy, because they could have been pockets after Casino, and so it was a case of being cautious and just patrolling as we went along to see what we could find.
Were you able to go off the roads at all, or were you more or less confined to the roads and tracks?
We were mostly confined to the main road, but when there were side tracks, we used to take a dingo and go off, you know, to where the track probably would have been dead end anyway, narrow. And I used to do that quite a lot. We'd send off on a little track up a mountain or things, just to make sure. And I used to enjoy that really, because it was lovely scenery from some of the hills. Not so much there in that area, but as we got further north, you could go up to some of these little mountain villages, where the villagers would be delighted to see you and welcome you. Although, well, as we went up, we weren't sure what we would meet. And I used to be just on my own, the dingo, and my driver, or I'd drive, and the gunner would be just the two of us in the vehicle. So if we hadn't met anything, we wouldn't have been there a lot of use. Although we had the radio, we could report if there was anything we had.
Did you ever come across any enemy or...?
Not on that bit. Because I think by then the enemy were withdrawing, and they wouldn't have left their men probably isolated, because if they'd been up there, it would have been very difficult for them to find a line of retreat without coming back onto the main sort of field roads.
Did you have good maps for that era?
Yes. I thought the maps were very good, really.
I mean, do you know what sort of maps they were? Were they prepared from air photograph? Were they coloured and contoured, or were they and white?
Oh, no, they were coloured. But they were, and they weren't a quarter inch, and they were an inch to a mile, which was even better, because you could then spot all the little... Yeah, I thought the maps were very good.
So you could plan your patrols and...
And watch out and know where there's a house up there or whatever. It was good. Which makes all the difference, I think, if you're sort of fighting anything, that you have got a decent map and you've got a good idea before you move on what the road is like, really. You can more or less visualise it after you've been, like reading the book, isn't it? Read the map.
What sort of front were you covering? Do you know how wide your sector was on which you were doing these reconnaissances?
I couldn't tell you in miles. I could tell you by looking at the map.
Yeah.
We were only interested, really, in our particular area, the squadron area. We knew that A would be on our right and C on the left, or there'd be one squadron up or two up and one in reserve, and that's all we wanted to know, really.
What sort of formation did the armoured cars use when they went up the main roads? Were they in line ahead, or did they manage to get...
You could do. You'd take it in turns. You'd probably have a dingo leading, an armoured car behind him, another armoured car, and a dingo behind. Or you might get an armoured car lead, a dingo, an armoured car, a dingo. Depend on the situation and what you've been meeting up with. And also, too, you had to keep changing around. It would be most unfair for the same person
to be leader all the time.
To be leader all the time, when you're in the lead, you're the one who's going to be shot at first, or we reckoned anyway. So it was always good to change around.
One thing the Germans were renowned for doing in Italy was leaving the roads mined and booby-trapped. Yeah. Did you encounter any...
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was going to come on to that a bit later, actually. We found that as we got on, not just in this area, but as we got on further, that it was a different type of war to what we've been used to. On the desert, you had a fair amount of warning, and you could... you had space to manoeuvre. You could get out of the way very, very quickly. But in Italy, it's different altogether. You've come round the corner and boom, you were eyeball to eyeball almost with the enemy. Whereas before, you had that distance. And also, you found that one of the tricks they did in Italy, didn't come across it in North Africa, whether the First Army did or not, I don't know. but you get a piece of wire attached across along a road, sort of neck high, you know, or dispatch ride, or armored car, or jeep driver. And if you're going fast, the wire would be taut across the road, and you wouldn't see it necessarily, and you know, it could decapitate you, really. So they started putting on a piece of angle iron up in the front of the vehicle, about so it covered the top, you know, about a 6 foot piece. And when that was going along, that would break the wire. Okay. But then the enemy started to get wise to that. So what they used to do then was attach a landmine or a mine of some sort to the tree.
Oh.
You see, so when the wire broke, the mine would go off. So it's you know, that sort of things that we weren't used to. It was more of a gentleman's war on the desert, whereas this one was really a bit vicious, I think.
It sounds as though the war in Italy was rather more similar to the war that you had been fighting in Belgium than the one you'd been fighting in the desert, in a way, in that you could meet the enemy head on without much warning.
Right. Yes, yes. On the desert, you always had actual warning. You know, you could accept. I think it was a bit tighter in Tunisia. You know, but certainly on the desert, you could see the enemy, and they could see you. And the closer you got, the more danger you're in. But if you want to keep out of the way, you could sit back. They would sit back and say, "Oh, they're not going to bother us." And that's how you used to do it, especially before when they were building up for a big battle, like Knightsbridge and things like that. When they were building up and building up, we were right up 50 miles ahead of Knightsbridge, near enough 50 miles, and of the main line. And the enemy knew you were there, we knew you were there, but they never followed you. But in Italy, it was slightly different.
You say it was a more vicious type of war. You hadn't encountered anything like that before, that sort of...
No, not so close contact. Occasionally you'd bump into something, but on the desert. But on the whole, it was a different war altogether. And of course the conditions were different. You know, you had the rain, you had the cold, you had the heat. It was a different type of war altogether. But anyway, we went on from this lovely little haven we were in, and around about this time near Subiaco, where we lost Taffy Roberts. He was wounded in the eye. He lost an eye, actually. So he went off back. And we also lost the Sergeant Daly of B Squadron. He was killed by an accident, actually. So that was two. He lost that.
Was that a driving accident or something?
No, the Taffy Roberts, they'd come back from patrol and they were brewing up. And I think they had made a fire to put up on, you know, and cook their evening meals or something. And the women got, and they had this fire going, and they were sitting around making it, and there was an explosion. And whether there was a bullet or something in amongst the, where they were having the fire, but there was an explosion, and Taffy got it in the eye. So he lost his eye. And just shortly after that, Sergeant Daly was getting his armoured cars sorting out and whatnot. And of course, they had the smoke discharges in the front. And you had to lean out the turret to load. And he was doing this, and he must have caught the trigger or something, and this canister was fired, and it came out and hit him in the head and killed him instantly.
So, presumably he must have caught it with his foot
with
or
his foot or something. Exactly how it happened. It was just one of those things, really, which was a bit sad, because he was a very young lad, really. You know, that's what we all were then. to lose someone in that way anyway.
Seems a waste.
It is a waste, you know. And then the next day we took 30 prisoners. It's 6 troops we got them. And
do you remember how that happened?
Well, they suddenly appeared, I think, on the front of the 6 troop, and they turned out to be Russian. But the nationalities, they were Slavs, Polish, and Czechs. And they must have been conscripted into the German army, and they were obviously reluctant fighting men. So I think they more or less surrendered as soon as they possibly could. So I don't know what sort of regiment was in front of us to have that sort of people, because they were obviously, I think, not their best fighters, because they would lack the spirit, I think.
Did you see anything of them?
Only when they came in, you know, but we were only just normally about a mile away from the whatever troop, so they would come back to us. And we used to get rid of them as soon as we could.
Push them back to the rear.
Back to the POW camp or to the nearest brigade HQ. Just anything like that. Want to go back for interrogation as soon as possible anyway.
Were they ordinary infantry or what sort of uniform they were wearing?
No, they were infantry. They were nothing else. They weren't specialised people like engineers or they were just foot soldiers. And just after that, at 3:45 in the morning on the 16th of June, B Squadron got the breakthrough. We were in our armoured car and we sped through Terni. And I think it's quite a big town, Terni, actually. And the enemy were retreating, and so we got our whips out and off we went. And as we went up, the road was quite a good wide road, one of the main roads. I think that was Route 9, but one of the main roads up through Italy. And the road was littered with dead horses, their transport, obviously. And where they'd been shelled, the road had been shelled, and the horses were blown up with fly and awful stench as we went along. To these animals, not just the odd one, but counting the whole distance, you've got probably 30, 40 horses. Or
sounds like a whole transport column.
Probably, yeah. But not all together, one here and another couple here and whatnot. The horses might have been wounded and then eventually. That was as we were going along. Because by then we were doing quite a lot of artillery ahead and aircraft. I think we had mastery of the sky then anyway. So the RAF played a big part in that.
Did you see a lot of them going overhead?
Oh yes, yeah.
But
mainly fighters, individuals, not big formations. We didn't see that at all. I think probably the formations never used to come over the battlefield area. They used to come and probably from a big other direction to bomb big concentrations of enemy. All we saw was the 2-3 fighters. And I think a bit later we got so that we could call on the fighters. But that was a bit later in the battle.
At this early stage, did you have any way of indicating to the fighters that you were friendly?
No, we all had our indication marks on the back on the top of the engine covers, which was good enough. And I think too, our line was such that they knew anything beyond that. Because Italy was massive river lines, really,
yes,
running from east to west, weren't they? So they were jolly good markers to say, don't bomb anything south of that or north of that. So it was, whereas on the desert there was no line at all.
No. What were these marks on the engine covers? What were they like?
There was the white, big white star.
Yes.
Like the American thing. Mm. And we had them put on the desert.
Mm.
And of course the alien cover was quite wide. And of course that would show up quite well from the sky. Mm.
Did you see anything of enemy aircraft?
Yes, occasionally, yeah. Mainly fighters again, the 109 Messerschmitt. Used to fly quite low down through along the valleys, and you could see the pilots quite clearly in lots of cases.
Did they ever attack you?
No. They'd done their job further back, I think, but they'd come back using this. But we, I don't think we were, that I can recall at the moment, ever really machine gunned by the fighters in Italy.
So you had been in the desert, hadn't you? You'd been attacked
quite a lot in the
quite
desert,
often.
Yeah. But I think probably, but of course, we were too close to their front line.
Mm.
You know, because I suppose in the other case, we were probably 100, 200 yards away from them on the river line. They'd be one side of the river, we'd be just the other side.
Mm.
So it was a bit risky to attack us with aircraft.
You'd have been you were small targets, though, weren't you, anybody?
Right.
And
that wasn't worth
it. Fairly close country.
Mm.
What about the enemy's recce elements? Did they provide a rear guard? Were they doing the same sort of thing as you were doing, as you were pushing up?
Yes, they always leave a rear guard.
Mm.
Whenever the enemy retreated, they'd never fail but have a couple of good anti-tank guns, you know, placed in a jolly good position. And take the toll of whatever was coming out whenever they could.
Mm.
Once they just place up six and everyone goes.
Mm.
They were masters of the art of withdrawal.
But did they have their own armoured cars out to screen as well? Were you encountering them in
didn't
Italy?
Didn't need much armoured cars.
You didn't?
No. The only thing we would meet really would be big scout cars with infantry with them, with bazookas. They seem to be, in our area anyway, more concerned, you know, let us get close and make sure we get them with a bazooka, which was probably a better thing than having an armoured car, which you could see straight away, probably. Whereas an infantryman in a ditch with a bazooka, it takes a lot of spotting.
What about the anti-tank guns? Could you spot those either, or were they easily concealed?
We've got a man who could really camouflage, could have it on a bend.
Mm.
So as you came round the bend, you don't get much chance to see it. Of course, he'd be there waiting for you, and he'd be lined up on the road. And it's just a matter of, well, there he is, bang, and you.
Mm.
And then they could withdraw.
Yes. Did your squadron have a significant series of losses due to those German?
Well, yes, we lost.
Yeah,
mainly to by bazooka stuff.
Mm. Had you met the bazooka before, Italy?
I don't think we met them in. I don't think we met them until we got to Italy.
Mm.
But they called phosphorus drilling, I think, when they were there, weren't they?
There's a thing called the Panzerschreck, and there's a thing called the Panzerfaust that they had. It certainly had in Normandy.
Well, it would be about the same time as we can.
Yes. Yes.
I think one, the small hand one, was a Fosspatrone.
Fosspatrone.
Is that not what that is? I think that's what it's called.
Mm.
But you could check.
Haven't heard of it. Yeah.
What
sort of range would they?
I didn't know what their range was, but I should reckon the same as a Piat.
Mm.
So a really effective one, a couple hundred yards.
Mm. So you had to get really close before they would engage with that.
Yes. Well, they can if there's ditches and cover.
Yeah.
And if they're that close, they can't miss.
Mm.
And they'd probably have another one or two tucked around anyway.
Mm.
Backed up by infantry.
Did you have any? Did you develop any drills to deal with this new threat from infantry with bazookas?
Not really. I think a lot of it we put down to our common sense and immediate action. I mean, you still good having a drill that you necessarily went through when you've just been shot at. It's a case of, you know, put down smoke. I think that was all immediate fire. If we're shot at, it was smoke.
And then pull back.
And pull back and then try to observe and...
Presumably, though, if they were using infantry, they would be quite vulnerable to your machine guns.
Yes, if you could see them.
Yeah.
You see, but probably, you see, now if there was an attack on the first car, put smoke, the car behind would immediately open up with machine gun fire.
Yes.
To give the covering fire, but no matter what, he'd probably spray the area, or if he could see anything, see where the flash came from, which he might be further back. And then be able to shoot at that thing. But certainly they would machine gun along the roadside if that looked an obvious place where infantry could be.
In the roadside ditches.
That's right. The car behind would do that.
And you mentioned them using anti-tank guns. Were these the standard 50 millimetre?
That wouldn't have been the 88s. The 88s would have been used in the sort of a bigger role.
Long range role.
Long range, and also in places like the Gothic Line and that, where there was heavy tanks which they wanted to take out from way back.
Was there a similar immediate action for dealing with an anti-tank gun if it opened up on you? Was it the same thing? Just
same thing.
Smoke and pull back?
That's right. Smoke, probably fire at the same time. I mean, the troop leader or the commander would fire the smoke because the trigger was on his side.
Yes.
And the gunner then could be spraying at the same time and then withdrawing. And the other car behind would be... You wouldn't just fire smoke and come back. The gunner would be looking through his sights, and if he could see anything, then he would...
You don't knock on it.
And at the same time, spraying as well, machine gunning, in order to keep people's heads down.
Did you have this sort of smoke projection system on the Dingo as well as on the armoured cars?
No.
What would
I
you do if you...
We had a smoke, I can't recall having a smoke. They did on the later ones, the ferrets and that sort, but on the Daimler, I don't think they did. I'm certain they didn't have one.
So what would you have done then? What would your immediate action have been if you'd run into a bazooka man or an anti-tank gun? Would it just have been to sugar off as quickly as you could?
Yeah. We did have these phosphorus grenades.
Yes.
You could throw a lead gun up, I think. But if you were in that position, just been fired at by an anti-tank gun, if you weren't hit, you know, you'd get out of jolly quick. You probably wouldn't have time to get a grenade and throw. And if you've got a good driver, you wouldn't want telling. It'd be back. You know, and you used to train your drivers, and certainly my drivers didn't want any orders from me. If they were fired at, they'd be moving back unless I told them otherwise. But certainly that was the immediate.
And if you were shooting at an anti-tank gun, would it be any good machine gunning, or would you have to use the main armament of an armoured car?
Oh, with an anti-tank gun, the crew all around it, that would do it. But at the same time, I think you'd find the gunner would use both.
Yes.
I mean, if he's got the two pounder. He'd have an HE in the
breech,
and he'd fire that. At the same time, his machine gun as well. And if necessary, reload and another HE in the area. It's all dependent on the situation. But with the HE, two pounder, that was a good weapon because that would, you know, give a lot of shrapnel all around. That didn't have necessarily have to be a direct hit.
I presume you'd be going for the crew of the gun rather than the gun itself.
Yes, the crew was the ones that fired it. At the same time, if you could get a direct hit on the gun, but it would knock out. But if you knocked out the crew, you've got the gun. So we were pushing along, and we were going at a tremendous speed. We were going through different